This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today.
Shorty, get down, grab your keyboard. Got a website you must see now. For libertarian viewpoints, this is your joint. Turn the Fox News down. Commentary is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get it out of my mind. Wow. I think about the podcast all the time. Wow. A national to the state news. Trust these dudes, it's really, really cool. Spangle, Harrington, and Gold, it's not their fault. Government be acting like some fool. Greg Clance and Joe Ruiz got some entertaining things for you to read. Oh, baby, it's a perfect 10. If you wanna get in, better read now so you can win. Oh, we are libertarians.
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. This is episode 35, and we've got a very special episode. We've got We Are Libertarians with token Republicans on hand. We, as per usual, have Greg Lenz here. He's our token Republican.
Yeah, if Greg wasn't token enough for us.
I you know what? I took the world's shortest political quiz. And
smallest,
I got your smallest.
Please.
And got 80%. I was a libertarian.
80?
No, 180.
180. All right.
Yeah.
That's respectable. What were the ones you disagreed on?
It was completely getting rid of welfare.
Look at you. Typical Republican. You love the welfare.
He's not pure, man. He can't be on the podcast
anymore. And then also with us is Hannah Drazich. Drazich is a female Republican. So
true.
Very.
My Romney shirt.
She wore her Romney. Wore a Romney shirt. I don't know how we found one, but there is a female young Republican. I just thought they were all old white men.
No, we're young and hot.
She is white, so let's just cover that.
Very true.
So, that's an important point.
And then also with us is Maya Axton from CreatingMaya.com. How are you doing?
I'd be better if there weren't so many Republicans in the room.
We did the Creating Maya podcast before everybody got here, so bubbly, very happy. And then Republicans walked in with the Mike Pence shirt on and the Mitt Romney shirt, and Maya went like my other cat Muffins that nobody's ever seen, and like just started hiding and growling when people walked in. We mentioned that we would share a story, and we'll still share the story, but we'll do it in a different way than we were going to.
Christ. Players all over your house.
This is a live broadcast, please. It's a professional broadcast. Also in the room is Mark Warner, a well-known rhino here in Indiana, a Republican in name only, and is apparently mad that I have things in my house and he can't stop from tripping over them. Chris Galt is not with us tonight. We've had an interesting couple of days with our buddy Chris Galt. We love him dearly. He's not joining us tonight by choice. He will be back, hopefully, eventually. We've just had some creative differences. You may have seen on the Facebook page the argument over fluoride. It started with Google, guys. It really did. It started with Google. Give the mic to Greg. Started with last week's episode where we were just kind of lightly teasing him about Google, and then it took an ugly turn.
It did. It always does.
It always does.
Google is his hot button.
As we mentioned,
I think we found that there is more than one thing that is his hot button.
That's true. That's true.
So, Chris, I don't know if he's a conspiracy theorist or not, but he wants to talk about it tonight. As we're going to talk about Glenn Beck, and we're going to talk about the role, you know, how libertarian do you have to be a libertarian? And he wanted to introduce conspiracy theorists, and I said no, because the last time we had this argument, Chris and Creighton can't handle it. And this is the podcast.
Hey,
is...
don't. I'm just going to stand up for my integrity here. I did not throw that punch.
Okay.
I did not initiate
in the episode in the title where it says the fight, they had a fight about conspiracy theories. And Creighton's point is that they don't belong in the libertarian movement and they tar us. And Chris's side is that everything should be on the table. We should be able to be talking about these issues. And what if they're true or what if they're not? But you'll never know if you don't investigate them and learn about them. Well, after the show, they continued to fight. Because if you listen to the end of that episode, they really go after each other in that episode. And, like, they're screaming at each other. And we get off the air, and they continue to fight. So then they eventually, like, two 22-year-old males get up in each other's face. And I'm sitting there closing down the podcast. And
weeping,
just,
crying.
No, laughing hysterically.
He was laughing.
The funniest stuff I'd ever seen in my life. And, like, they just keep going at it. And I'm like, you know what? One of them is going to throw a punch because they're getting really heated. And I go to stand up, and one of them throws a punch.
Which one?
Chris Gault, Mr. Non-Aggression Principle.
Shocking.
And I just sit back down because I'm like, you know what? These two need to get it out of their system. And that might be what needs to happen now. There needs to be a fight. And it all ended up fine. It worked out and nobody got hurt. And it was sort of, now it's just sort of funny and everybody laughs about it. But that's one of the reasons that we don't want to talk. That's one of the reasons we don't talk about conspiracy theories on the show here. That irks Chris. And it is a bone of contention. And I'm sure there are a lot of listeners that would disagree about that. And at some point, we may get to it, we may not, but I doubt it. Because that is an issue that libertarians get smeared on by people like her, the Republicans. They say, oh, you're all just a bunch of 9/11 truthers. You know, and I have a bone of contention with Ron Paul by going on shows like Alex Jones. I understand that he wants to get his message out to as many people as possible, but when you legitimize Alex Jones, you make all of us look bad, you know? And we're not saying Chris is Alex Jones by any stretch of the imagination, because he's not, you know, but he is willing to discuss those issues where I don't think a lot of us are. So hopefully he'll be joining us soon, but
he will.
He'll be back. He'll be back. So God love him.
I'm not looking forward to it. I just want to put that out there.
So we're going to talk about whether or not Glenn Beck is a libertarian, and we needed somebody who hates everyone, not just Glenn Beck. So we decided to call Maya, our token anarchist for this episode. Excuse me, voluntarist.
Voluntarist, yes, because that's the correct term to use now. But it's not just that I hate everybody, I'm a misanthrope. So I have an extreme distrust for the human race and all its activities. So make sure to clarify that next time. Okay, Chris?
Can you write that down for me?
I'll come over there and staple it in your forehead.
So if you've been watching the Facebook page, we said we'd talk about that, and so we did. We didn't want to disappoint you, and you might have seen some stuff on the Facebook page. So that's the drama. So now we're setting it up like a Dallas season ender. Will he not return?
TLDR. Creighton doesn't like conspiracies. Gault does. We argued about it. He doesn't want to be on the podcast today.
Today. Yep. Hopefully in the future, because we love our buddy.
Oh, yeah.
He's a founding member of the podcast. Maya doesn't love anyone, though. Not even Mittens. Look how sweet and cute she is.
I second that, though. I hate Mittens, too.
So what we're going to talk about tonight is libertarians. All right? This may be a come to Jesus. This may be a full-throated defense of libertarians. We wanted to have on... We always have Greg on, because Greg's great. Hannah, we've had on before. And why did you roll your eyes when I said Greg's great? He is.
Last time we had Hannah on, it was for like a 5-second blip, and all we heard was,
abortion.
You want to talk about abortion?
I think really what it gets down to, guys, is abortion.
Yeah.
And we're like, get her off the podcast. Get her off. She comes up to my office the other day to talk with my boss, and she whips out her laptop. You know what she has on her laptop? A 9/11 sticker.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Never forget.
Never forget.
That will be turned into many memes.
Many memes. So we have put a scumbag hat on Hannah, and we have created scumbag conservative girl. So we'll use that later on. So that's not a joke either. So we're going to discuss Glenn Beck and if he's a libertarian or not. And is Glenn Beck even welcome? And we're also going to discuss some of the differences between libertarianism and conservatism. Because I would say between the Republicans and Democrats, libertarians usually are identified with Republicans. although on issues of things like social issues and foreign policy, libertarians generally agree with what the Democrats say.
Mm-hmm.
Not what they do, but what they say. And libertarians, and this is overgeneralizing, generally agree with what Republicans say they'd like to do, not with what they actually do, which led to the creation of a third party, which is not even the argument tonight. The argument tonight is about ideology. It's not about Libertarian Party versus Republican Party, although we all know we have our teams. So let's start with Glenn Beck. Last night on his show, he had on Jacob Hornberger, Jack Hunter, and Students for Liberty guy. We can't...
Zach Slavak, I found
Zach
it.
Zach Slavak.
I couldn't find his Twitter account to make my reference that I was trying to make earlier.
So, Glenn Beck had on the Libertarians, and he opened his show, and we it was like Clockwork Orange. We sat Maya down, forced her eyelids open, made her watch Glenn Beck for like 15 minutes before the show just to be informed. And he goes on to talk about the sliding scale from anarchism to totalitarianism. And it starts with anarcho-capitalist, then he went to Penn Jillette, then Ron Paul, then Rand Paul, you know, and sort of all the way down to Van Jones and Barack Obama in the totalitarian section, because Barack Obama and Pol Pot
were right together,
so much in common. But what were your impressions of what you heard? Because I would like to argue that most libertarians have never actually listened to a word Glenn Beck says. They just hear, I'm not supposed to like Glenn Beck, so I don't like Glenn Beck. What was your impression of what you heard?
I bought his book, his first book, the day it came out. I also went to the 828 event, so we'll just put that out there. So I've followed Glenn Beck since I remember seeing him on CNN, and I watched his show on Fox every day. So... But I've grown since then where he hasn't. But the little sliding scale thing was pretty good. I cringe every time he says, you know, endowed by a creator and then make some reference to God. But yeah, that's fine. You know, those crazy Jehovah Witnesses. But it was a good scale. I was disappointed with the anarcho-capitalism being the end-all be-all of anarchy and how it kind of overlapped where the Constitution is. Did you see the brackets that overlapped where the Constitution started? Did you notice that?
Barely.
Yeah, no, that was...
I was too busy eating Little Caesar's pizza to pay attention.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's gotten a lot better, and that scale was splendid compared to the scales he's done before, but, you know, I'm still not, you know, really that...
Creighton, you watched it. What were your impressions of last night's episode?
I was kind of like my eye. I watched him a little bit back in the past just because... I knew he was, as far as the Fox pundits went, he was probably relatively the better one out of...
He was
better than O'Reilly. I knew that much.
He is and was libertarian friendly.
He was. I mean, he wasn't so... It didn't seem like he beated the Republican Party drum as hard. But I have watched some of his stuff, and he does have some times where he goes kind of off and, you know... says things that I don't necessarily agree with and I think are kind of dumb. But I did watch the episode last night, and I think he's changed a lot since when his show ended on Fox. And I think it's something that a lot of the libertarian comment threads on the internet these past few days have not really taken into account. The last time they ever probably heard of the guy was when he was on Fox, or they hear something about his radio show when he talks about Israel, and that's the impression they get. And, I mean, he's outspoken on some issues that – and those are the issues that everybody hears about. But he was pretty good on yesterday's show. I mean, you were describing the scale. The scale was – I mean, how often do you see a more mainstream figure using the, you know, anarchy to totalitarianism scale rather than the left-right paradigm? I mean, how often – I could tell, because I'm really big on the Declaration of Independence. I could tell that guy knows – what the Declaration of Independence says. He's probably memorized it. I mean, so I've got respect for the guy on a number of things after watching that episode, because I think he's grown a lot. I mean, he was still really hesitant on a lot of the libertarian, when the libertarians say, what is this? What do we need to do? How do we branch out? He was kind of hesitant on saying that those are the routes we need to go. But nevertheless, he sounded like he had an open mind about it, which I think the threads in these past few days I guarantee you 90% of those people haven't heard anything of him since he was on Fox.
Right. There's one there's one thing to point out, though, is this is Glenn Beck, who has most likely read more books and read more into politics than most of the people we know, honestly. He has an amazing team of researchers and people that put stuff together for him. To give him more time to come around to libertarianism, to come around to these ideals, for him to still struggle with them, that doesn't seem right to me. I mean, if you read that much and you're into that many things and you haven't come to the conclusion of libertarianism, you may never, honestly.
That's not a fair assessment.
Hold on. How much of it does balance out with the fact that he has a conservative audience of those 75-year-old Republican ladies with the straw hats and the buttons on them? I mean, that's
so that's the main point, though.
Don't even look at me like that, Mark Warner, because you know that every fundraiser you go to, it's full of 75-year-old women with straw hats.
Yep.
Give me a high five on that, Hannah Drazich.
Need to point out that Glenn Beck is a business person.
Right.
He's an amazing business person, and he's in this to make money.
Right.
So when we talk about, is he a good libertarian? Is he good for libertarianism? It's about the same answer with everything else. Kind of, maybe. We got to watch it.
I don't think it's a fair assessment to say that just because he may have done a lot of research and he hasn't been convinced to the same exact ideology that we have is – I don't think it's a fair assessment to say that he is being subversive in any way, or if he's just being – he's kowtowing to some other incentive other than his own thought process.
No, that's what I'm saying. Not to libertarianism yet – he's not going to get there because of his personal belief system. He's a statist when it comes to the military, and he may believe that full-heartedly for the rest of his life and always disagree.
He's not necessarily a statist in the same sense that I think you mean it. He's been very vocal about coming home from Afghanistan, and I think Friedrich Hayek is a guy who didn't – he spent his whole life coming around to libertarian ideas. He was a flat-out liberal when he first started writing stuff, and then Mises started to convince him towards libertarian ideals, and he spent the rest of his life really just moving more towards libertarianism. And even Milton Friedman. Friedman did not want to end the Fed when he was younger, but as he got older, he realized that that was a good idea.
And look at Ayn Rand. Look at Ayn Rand, who said nothing nice about really nobody, but especially not libertarians in the Libertarian Party specifically. You know, she was not a fan of libertarianism and libertarians.
That was a personal vendetta. That was because she said libertarians stole her idea.
That she stole from John Locke.
Yeah, no. That doesn't really apply to apples and oranges for this conversation.
But that's what I'm saying is she's still revered by a lot of libertarians.
I just don't think it's fair to say because somebody hasn't if somebody's moving in a certain direction, but they haven't gone the whole way yet. It's not a fair assessment to just say, well, they're never going to get there, and there's some other incentive stopping them that is other than pure logic and reasoning, because some people there are so many different things that shape your perspective on the world rather than just reading books. And a good example of this is with African Americans. I mean, their perspective. No, let me make a point. Their perspective on the world is very much shaped by the history of the civil rights movement. I think that's a fair assessment.
Sure.
Things that happened back then are going to have a totally different value that happened within that movement, or have a totally different value than other things. And just because reason would say that one thing that somebody maybe pushed back in civil rights was maybe not necessarily a good idea toward the ends that they would want, doesn't mean that, you know, they're just going to disregard it completely and they're like, yeah, you're right, and I'm going to forget it, because they have an emotional attachment to this stuff. And
they're invested in it.
Yeah, there's an emotional attachment to it, and that is so much more powerful than pure logic sometimes. Now, don't get me wrong, I am not one who likes to say that you should cling to emotion to dictate your political philosophy. I dislike that entirely, but I'm not going to sit here and say that a lot of people don't operate that way, and they're not wrong because of it.
I'm not saying that he's wrong or there's anything at all a problem with it. I'm just saying that as long as he's clinging to his extreme religious views and his views on some other things, why do we want to push him to be a libertarian when that's maybe just not what he is?
Okay, but I'm going to challenge you on that. Give me an example of his extreme religious views.
He's a Mormon.
Okay.
So?
But so what? You know what? Here's
that, No. I'm not saying that's extreme and necessarily a bad thing. But compared to like people like me and the average person, he's way more in his religion and his belief
that's because
than most people.
But being, who cares?
Because, you know what, being
I don't care. I'm just saying that's you just brought up the point that someone might be affected by the civil rights movement 50 years ago. This is the same thing. That's a huge driving force in his life.
Now, let me listen to Glenn Beck frequently. I go through spurts, and I've been listening a little bit lately. And even now, to this day, he still continually says, I'm not a libertarian. I'm moving in that direction. I'm sympathetic to libertarians, even though they don't really like me and have much nice to say about me, which I think is a damning statement, which is part of the reason that this whole Glenn Beck kerfuffle in the libertarian movement right now has more to do...
That's such a fun word.
It has more to do with Glenn, with libertarians and their reaction to people who aren't 100% pure libertarians than it does Glenn Beck the person.
Yeah, the best thing that I've heard in the past few days is, do we have a litmus test that you have to pass in order to be a libertarian? And I would vehemently say no. There
but
is
the
not,
old guard always does. And every young it, political just, party them, always do.
Look to your right there. Would you say there's a litmus test to being a libertarian?
Adherence to the NAP.
Okay, does that mean that if I am for a tax cut instead of abolishing taxes, does that make me less of a libertarian because I would advocate that a tax cut is a good thing, even though that is not the dissolvement of our taxation system? Because...
Well, there's some people that live in reality and there's some people that don't. For those who said that you would be violating the NAP to support a tax cut and not support the total, you know, abolishment of the tax system, no, that's wrong. If you are supporting anything to change and decrease the amount of aggressions against people, you're adhering to the NAP in a libertarian sense. Versus like a voluntarist, with me, I'd say, is if you support the government in any shape and or form, you're aggressing against people. If you work for the government, you're aggressing against me. The IRS, if you're that little paper pusher, you're technically supporting a system that's aggressing against me and actively stealing money from me. So libertarians agree with the incrementalism. That's the step different to voluntarist is we do not believe in incrementalism.
Can I just throw something in? Mark works for the government. Yeah. So just saying.
Mark is a total socialist, which is why we call him a rhino.
Dim's fighting words.
Oh, man.
Dim's fighting words.
Technically supporting a system that aggresses against me. So
yeah. Let's be clear. Maya doesn't vote.
Ooh.
That's how serious she is.
Yeah.
Like, she worked on Rupert's campaign.
Hours a week on a campaign, and I still don't vote.
Right. Did not go on election day.
Active aggression.
Yep.
Over other people.
Yeah. So, that's
I know
why we love
it. Greg's been trying to say something for, like, 20 minutes now.
I think all of this is so good. Like, I think this is fantastic. If you would have never had this discussion 10 years ago about the Libertarian Party. Never would have made it into the major media. Never would have had a guy carrying the torch like Glenn Beck. You guys are having growing pains.
Whoa. Before people have a heart attack, Glenn Beck's not carrying the Libertarian banner. Let's make that disclaimer. But that's part of the discussion is a guy who comes out like Glenn Beck and says he wants to build a libertarian network, and he goes on his show, which last night, I would argue, compared to his other shows, was, I know a lot of libertarians are going to be watching. I want to make a good impression.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes on and he says, okay, so there's this whole untapped group of people that goes from Marco Rubio and Paul Ryan, who he said in that episode he is suspicious of, that they could go either way, all the way down to Penn Jillette.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole range of people that are not being served with their interests when it comes to media. And he and the Blaze want to provide a network for them to get information. And then it goes all the way from... Then he went from CNN to Fox to MSNBC and all that. You know, it doesn't mean that he's carrying the torch, but he wants to serve the libertarian market, and the libertarian market is saying, go F yourself.
Yeah, they don't want him, but he doesn't have to necessarily be a libertarian, but what he can be is the gateway to libertarianism. He can be, like, for so many people, who's going to go from being a big government Republican or even a Tea Partier immediately into reading Rothbard? It's just not going to happen.
Right.
It's a gradual process, and if Glenn Beck can facilitate that process and be the gateway, there's no harm in that at all.
Though something that I've kind of been thinking about recently, though, is that all this argument over whether or not we should you know, respect Glenn Beck, build a coalition with Glenn Beck's kind of people. And I think that's one thing that I've been trying to say, is that it's not necessarily a matter of saying that Glenn Beck is a libertarian, but it's, will you or will you not build coalitions with people that you pretty much agree with on most things? And
exactly.
A lot of people have been saying, no, Glenn Beck does not need to be affiliated with us at all. And I just kind of think, where are the libertarians in a position within the national dialogue to be dictating what they shall and shall not deem to be appropriate to talk about as far as the future of, you know, libertarian philosophy? I mean, we don't have a large enough voice in this entire country to be out there saying, you pretty much agree with, you know, probably 80% of what we stand for, but because it's only 80%, we're not going to allow you to say anything, and you're not allowed to be affiliated with us. And it's just, the way I see it is, it logically leads to basically just people sitting in a circle jerk.
Exactly. Well, he has a show, and he has guests, and he talks about a myriad of issues. He's not representing the Libertarian Party. So, I mean, I disagree with him because I'm weird and I'm picky and I like to point bad things out about people, but he has a show and he's bringing in great guests and he has a great format. Why do we always, even everyone does it, all political aspects do it, they have to assign somebody to be the biggest champion and then worship the living crap out of them.
Hannah, give us your opinion.
So I really don't think Beck is political in the slightest. I think he's a smart businessman, and the reason why he's not going libertarian and not going Republican is because that suspense and not knowing which way he's going to go keeps people watching him, and that's how he's keeping up his following. I definitely think that
he is actually not going to ever swear in allegiance and try to build a.
He'll follow that line the entire time.
I don't think that's actually crazy, because
and it might get to the point where he has to in order to keep that following. Yeah. So then he will, but he's being a smart businessman, that is all, and he's proven how smart of a businessman he has in the past, and it's all about money. Yeah. And he's making a ton of money right
and
now.
Let me preface this for people who can't hear. I'm not saying that everything that Glenn Beck does is great, and I don't think that's what we're saying. I think he understands, from a person, I work at the intersection of marketing, media, and politics. He understands where the media is headed better than probably any other person in media today.
Yeah.
And is creating a media empire and is looking at the next generation, the millennial generation, and saying, what do they most identify when it comes to politics? It's libertarian. It's either Obama or Ron Paul. And I couldn't stomach serving the Obama market. So let's go after the Ron Paul crowd. So now this gets into his motives. Okay, because we've argued a million times on this show that libertarianism is the political philosophy for the next 100 years. And that he's making a business decision to go after the existing money, the Tea Party crowd, and the future money, which is the Ron Paul kids, you know. And he has, just when we were turning on the Blaze, I have Dish Network, so it's on my TV system, he had Matt Welch from Reason on.
Yeah.
And Welch is a frequent guest on their channel. I see on Reason all the time, you know, I was a guest on Blaze TV, here's the video. So that gets into his motives, you know. Is he saying things he doesn't believe because he wants to make money? I don't necessarily get the vibe from him that he would say things that he doesn't believe. He may over-exaggerate, but fundamentally, if he puts it on the air, he says what he thinks.
He's already made so much money off of the Tea Party.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Much. Oh,
yeah.
This last election cycle, what were those rallies he had, like, all over the place? What were they called? Sorry. Talk louder.
Hang on. I actually have a question. You said you went to 828.
Yes.
I still have no idea what that was.
Well, me either, because I happened to get a gallbladder attack the morning of, and I spent the entire day, well, half the day trying to find a D.C. hospital that was open and then being in it in extreme amounts of pain. But the people that went and videotaped and watched it, it was a good feels rally about bringing – I think what he's trying to do is build a community.
It was not political.
Yeah, no, it was completely non-political, yeah. But it was about building community and coming together for a myriad of reasons, but basically for moral and communal support. and nothing else is just support one another. We all kind of agree with this. Basically, what he's doing now with the show, there's a myriad of different beliefs and thoughts and feelings. Let's all come together and work towards a common goal.
He frequently says of Penn Jillette that he has a lot of respect for Penn Jillette, that while he may be an atheist, he has a moral code that he lives by, and that moral code is the NAP. I will not initiate force upon anyone. You know, non-aggression principle.
I mean, he takes it to the pacifist level, but...
Right. And so, you know, Glenn Beck had a series of rallies where he wanted to promote faith, hope, charity, love. You know, he did one in Israel for courage. He did one in Washington, D.C. for... Was that the faith, hope, love? Which one was it?
I don't...
He did one in Dallas, too.
Faith, hope, charity, I think.
Because he had, like, a series of posters. I think also what Glenn Beck is guilty of is that he is, when you decide to become a libertarian, you make a decision that you're going to start learning this philosophy, and you're going to adopt a philosophy of government. And I know our two Republican friends here, Mark and Hannah, would say, oh, well, Republicans and Democrats certainly do have a foundational set of principles, a foundational philosophy. That may be true or it may not be true, but it is not as robust and as well thought out and as consistent as the libertarian philosophy of government. And
that got some weird looks.
Yeah. But it's the truth. You're just going to have to deal with it. We'll talk about it later. Hold on. And so the more you learn about libertarianism, it's like jumping on a train. You start at one station and you head further down the tracks and you eventually end up at like the anarcho-capitalist train. And he is guilty of going through that transition on TV. So all the crap that he said 5 years ago that libertarians disagree with, he may or may not agree with that now. And that's what Alexander McCorbin at Students for Liberty said is, if you disagree with the stuff he said 5 years ago, just come out and say it.
Yeah, and the thing is how many – I mean, that's a great example. How many people that are self-professed libertarians right now started that way? I mean, how many people were, you know, Bush crones? How many people started off as – Yeah. As Barack Obama is the Messiah, or Bill Clinton was the best president we ever had. I mean, how many people started off essentially in the opposite perspective of what they now stand for? So who are you to say that Glenn Beck doesn't deserve a voice because he is not currently at the same level of ideological purity that you think he should be at?
In 2003, I had a pro-war rally on the Circle. It was a support the troops rally. Greg Garrison emceed it. It had Dan Burton spoke at it. I had Steve Booyer speak at it. It was like all these, you know, and then we had the Capitol Police get rid of the hippie protesters. Like, that's how hardcore I was.
Yeah, I mean, I was
for
I was
war in 2003.
I was totally, every time I'd get in an argument with people, George Bush was right. They just didn't find Saddam Hussein snuck the weapons of mass destruction out of Iraq before they got there.
Yep.
I was one of those guys.
And civil liberties and anti-war issues are my hot buttons now. Like, I'm rabid on that stuff. You know, I talk more about that than I do spending, which is a total transformation for me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's because if I had posted the video, and this is sort of the break that we don't give people in the libertarian movement, we just attack our own. I've never posted the video of that rally just to say, look, here, I got 1,000 people in freezing rain the day after Thanksgiving to come out and support the troops. You know, I'm proud of that I did this at like 20. You know, even though I'm not proud of the message anymore, I'm proud that I was able to organize this. You know, I would be attacked and I'd be called a fake libertarian and I'm not, you know, like...
A propaganda machine.
You're just phony.
Do we want this to be an organic set of ideas where people can grow and learn, and people will disagree? Everybody disagrees on everything, no matter how much solidarity there is amongst people within a certain movement. Do we want it to be something growing like that, or do we want it to be a cult? Do we want it to be a sorority almost, where if somebody does something out of line, you bring your sorority sisters around and you start heckling the crap out of them and telling them they're not pure enough, and then you kick them out of the club? I mean, because that's what it seems like. It seems like there's a large faction of people that say, if you are not to the level that I think you should be, then we should not associate ourselves with you in any way, shape, or form. And if you try and associate yourself with us, we will
We will vehemently deny that you are anything close to what we represent.
And that's changing. The Andy Hornings of this party are starting to leave. And so we've even opened up the doors to more of the anarchists, because it used to be you pushed the anarchists out of the Libertarian Party because they're the ones destroying it. But there's that's not necessarily a bad thing to have the serious super disagreements and the big bickering matches we all love, but not out, not with the new membership or the new public. I mean, we've got to have a buffer zone, and we've been building that. I mean, a lot of what the people think and see of the Libertarian Party is old. The way it's changed.
No, I know, and I agree.
It's going exactly where it should be.
There is a place for ideological disagreement and argument, because that is how you delineate certain things about an ideology. I'm not here saying that we shouldn't focus on whether or not, you know, we have ideologies or anything. What I'm saying is when the movement is put on national television and it makes national news, and it's because one of a person who is in a leadership position within the movement is out there saying that you can't be one of us because you're not pure enough, that's when it gets wrong. I mean, it's one thing if you have, you know, the guys who have been libertarians for like 20 years and they still disagree over whether or not you can have whether or not Prudhoe was right about mutualism or not. I mean, these little esoteric things that no one cares about unless you're like a diehard libertarian and you're in your circle and you don't care. You're just arguing over to argue about it. That's right. One thing. But it's another when you put that at the forefront of the movement and you make it represent what it stands for. The movement stands for smaller government. It stands for reducing the role of the state within your life. It stands for free markets. And I would argue that currently it stands for constitutionalism. Mm-hmm. Now, when you put that at the forefront, that's okay. But what we're doing now is we're taking argument and essentially cultism and throwing it at the front and saying, this is what we believe in, and this is why no one wants to become a libertarian. We scare off all these people because we are a minority. If we want to affect change towards what we all believe in to be right, then we have to reach out to a larger base because we're just not enough people.
And what needs to happen is exactly what Jack Hunter and Jacob Hornberger did. If you disagree with somebody like Glenn Beck, you go on their show and you confront them about the things in which you disagree. It's an honest discussion, and this is John Hospers wrote about this in a great article called The Anarchist Temperament, and he essentially comes down to it and says, thank you for that, Mark, comes down to it and says, it was Ronald Reagan.
Is that an Obama phone?
Yeah, is that an Obama phone?
That was a low blow.
That was a low blow. I'm sorry, Mark. My forgiveness.
Pay for my stuff.
What was I talking about?
You were talking about the anarchist temperament.
So the anarchist temperament by John Hospers basically says is that honest disagreement in a movement is what we need. We need to have an economic guy like Creighton, an anarcho-capitalist, I would say mostly, a voluntarist like Maya, conservative-leaning libertarian, and then me, who I just don't even know anymore. I'd say I would identify constitutional Republican, but I'm also very pragmatic. You know, I have a set of foundational principles, which is non-interventionism. I want to move in a direction where the government doesn't intervene in your economic, personal, and foreign affairs, period. And if we're moving in that direction, I'm happy. You know, what I don't tolerate is being an asshole. If you're going to be an asshole to other people for disagreeing with them, then just go away.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're a good person, the fact is that if you're going to be an asshole, stop it. And we're not immune. Yell out, yes. Did the Republicans have this same argument in their circles?
All the time.
Yes. Democrats do too. Jim Bopp.
They're the worst.
Jim Bopp out in Terre Haute has the Republican purity test, where he wants to make you subscribe to 10 principles of what a conservative is. And if you don't fit in that, then if you don't get like an 80%, you're out.
And yep. The thing with those 10 principles is every single quote unquote conservative Tea Partier has 10 totally different principles that they all think that you should follow.
Oh, God, yes.
Right.
That's why I think this is such a positive thing. Like, even like having this Glenn Beck discussion, the ultimate topic was, is this good for the Libertarian Party? And it's a fantastic thing. Like, you guys may not like it. You may piss off the founders and the purists, but that means it's growing. And I think that's ultimately good for everyone involved.
I do think it represents growing pains. I do.
It does.
But I think there is a danger. It is such a volatile isn't the right word. It is such a movement that is just walking on eggshells at the moment. Like, it is to the point where it isn't self-sustaining to the point, like conservatism, it's just so ingrained in culture, or being, if you live in like San Francisco, liberalism, it's so ingrained in the culture that it doesn't require effort to keep it alive.
No.
Libertarianism is at a point where it will die if there aren't people out there trying to make it grow. And I think we risk the fact of just dying and bickering, the movement dying because we all couldn't stop bickering with each other over who was right, Rothbard or Friedman. And it's like, give me a break. We can worry about that stuff when we've actually won something. We haven't won anything at the moment right now. We're sitting at the starting line. Public safety. So, I mean,
sorry about that. Yeah. Mark works for the city of Indianapolis, and sounds like there was a public safety issue. So,
yeah,
hope everybody's doing well.
But either way, my point is that I don't want people to go out and think, and I'm saying, don't worry about the ideas of liberty and don't hone them in and don't become more rigorous in your intellectual thought, because I think that is important. What I am saying is, don't think that it makes you more self-righteous because you have done the reading and that somebody else does not have all of the intellectual rigor that you have and they are vocal about what they do have.
All right. Final points we'll go Maya, Greg, Chris.
Okay, well, I guess that's going to be my final point, is that I'd see an issue, and I don't necessarily know how to word it correctly, is that we put anyone that's in the public light up on some kind of pedestal, and we expect them to be pure like you were just talking about, and I think that's the issue, and I think that's some of the problems that libertarians have, is we don't want leaders, we don't want big community leaders, when we need to stop acting like we do, because there's a half of us that, you know, want to have somebody up on a pedestal to be our voice and to carry our torch, when libertarianism doesn't work that way. We should be a giant sea of people moving towards something instead of, you know, just one, you know, one flagship. And that's why I see some of the issues with the libertarians, you know, hating on Glenn Beck, is that he's kind of postured himself to maybe be the torch carrier with some of the conversations he's had and he's been involved in, and then half the people out there want him to be the torch carrier, and that's, it's wrong on both ends, and I think that's where we run into all these problems.
And he even says in that episode last night, it's self-ownership. I want to encourage people to buy into self-ownership. Greg, final points on Glenn Beck.
I think this is a dumb worry to have. Like, Glenn Beck may not be a member of the Libertarian Party ever, but he could be people's first taste.
The first time I ever heard the word libertarian was Neil Bortz.
Yep.
And most people in the Libertarian Party hate Neil Bortz.
Exactly.
Now.
And it doesn't matter that whether he is or is a libertarian. He is getting the word out. He is reaching out to millennial generation who are going to be either the Libertarian Party that's going to consume the Republican Party, I'm sorry, Hannah, or they're going to just be like the Libertarian Party. They won't be part of the Republicans. That's the way the world's going.
I guess, for my final point, I guess what I'm trying to argue is, for any libertarians, and I mean libertarians, and you know who you are, just check your ego at the door. That's all I'm trying to say. Check your ego at the door. You are not done learning. You're not done growing. You're not done honing in what you believe in. And neither are people that haven't got to the point you are. So if somebody's out there with a big microphone and he's trying to promote something that you, for the most part, agree with, stop bickering over the little pieces of scrap fringe things that you disagree on, and stop making the perfect the enemy of the good. Because we're not in a position nationally, locally, anywhere to be dictating that we require a litmus test for you to be associated with us. We just don't have that much of an effect yet. So and check your ego.
And the fact is that even if Glenn Beck called himself a libertarian, how much damage could he really do?
No.
You know, and part of my problem with libertarians when it comes to Glenn Beck is the anti-religious sentiment. And I really, you know, I really feel like it's tough to be a libertarian Christian, you know, or any libertarian of any faith. There seems to be the vocal minority of people who aren't willing to let a person talk about their faith without some other person going, does that mean that you want dominionism? That you want the government to rule over?
Should we stone adulterers then?
Just because I go to church every Sunday, it does not mean that I'm for banning gay marriage or I'm for sodomy laws or any of that stuff. Like, libertarianism is perfectly compatible with Christianity and with every other faith system. In fact, I'd argue that it's the only one that's compatible because at the end of the day, the less rules, because if you're a Christian, you believe that eventually we end up with one world government where the son of the beast or
out of the earth.
Where, yeah, if you've read Left Behind, that's where we end up.
Yeah.
And you want to fight for a government that doesn't regulate religion. And it's interesting to see the shift in religious people from, you know, in the Christian movement, especially saying, okay, instead of fighting about social issues, we need to start fighting for religious liberty in the economic arena with things like birth control in the Catholic Church. You know, that's the fights that we ought to be having, that we ought to be standing up for religious liberty instead of fighting against people and giving them the impression that we don't have love for them. You know, so that's one of the things that I find troubling is sort of an anti-religious sentiment throughout all this debate.
I mean, I never really liked this anti-religious sentiment either. I mean, what is the main teaching of Jesus was
the golden rule?
Yeah, yep. Do unto others as you would do unto yourself. I mean, that's
Boo!
That's just the non-aggression principle is all that is. And I mean,
I'm trying to say Jesus was a libertarian.
Jesus was a total libertarian.
I might be saying that, bro. Hey, he did. He did. The only time he ever got mad was at the money changers.
That's right. Yep. He was ending the Fed.
He also said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's.
Well, that was our friend Hannah. Let's talk to Hannah. Let's get into the second part of our show. Let's shift.
He was talking about paying taxes, by the way.
All right. We're not going to argue about that anymore. We're shifting argument. All right. So you have been exposed to a lot of libertarians. You worked for National Right to Work in the past, and it was infested with libertarians.
Completely libertarian. I was the only Republican, the only neocon, as they called me.
So
they hated me. Well, I don't know if they hated me, but.
Well, they might
have. It's hard to hate girls.
It's hard to hate
girls.
I know.
Girls.
Especially when I was the only girl.
Oh, then they all were. Yeah, never mind. They had the urge to merge.
Someone's got a shrine in their closet right now. That Hannah.
Probably true.
They have probably hipster true. Glasses.
If
somewhere.
I'd ever vote for Romney, it'd be because of Hannah.
You know what? I'm pretty sure I won some Romney voters over that.
Atta girl. So what turns you? Why are you not a libertarian? Because you agree with libertarians on an awful lot of issues, and you there are even some, you know. Prestigious Republicans that you just are not a fan of because they're social conservatives. We're talking about small L, okay? This is not about party, all right? We're not talking about party, not asking you why you're not a member of the Libertarian Party. I'm asking why you don't adopt the small L philosophy when, you know, are you for gay marriage? For instance,
gay marriage, I really couldn't care less about. If you
three Republicans
into that mic,
if you want to be gay and you want to get married, I'm okay with that. It's not my business. I don't want anything. It doesn't matter. Am I ever going to be that way? No.
One.
But if they want to be that way, go for it.
So what?
One down.
One down.
No,
all right.
Three Republicans came out in the press this week in support of gay marriage.
I would hope so. It's about time.
Supporting gay marriage is not libertarian.
All right.
It's a start.
We're not getting into that.
It's a start. It's a start.
Okay, it's a question because if she had said, I am for... Hold on. If she had said, I'm for making sure that no gay person ever touches genitals with another gay person, then she would have been ruled out immediately.
Yes, you're done.
Right? So at least we're moving in a direction here.
Better question.
Would you be supportive of the idea that the state should not be involved in a marriage contract at all?
Yeah, I'd be okay with
there
that.
You go.
Okay, so what keeps you from adopting the libertarian philosophy?
Well, 2012 was not exactly a great example of this, but going back to maybe more like 2010, I like to win and you libertarians can't win an election.
Okay, but we're talking not about the Libertarian Party, right?
I'm just saying.
Wait.
It's true.
Was 2012 not a good example of that because the only ones who did win in 2012 were the libertarian-leaning Republicans?
Boom.
Possibly. But still, the point is.
See, so you're just... All right,
if you're
so,
a libertarian... Well, no.
But they didn't run under the Libertarian
They did not run under the Libertarian
name. Justin Amash but is...
Again, I want to say that this is not about party. I'm asking you why you don't self-identify yourself as a libertarian, small L.
Because I want a job.
Okay. But again, small L libertarian.
Okay.
Do you understand
I think what he is asking is, do you disagree to a large extent with the little L libertarian philosophy?
I don't. And honestly, I think my generation of Republicans really doesn't.
Right.
And I think give my generation, go like two generations past mine, and I think it'll be mostly libertarian.
The world, I think, will evolve into, or U.S. politics will evolve into both parties being socially liberal, mm-hmm. and then you'll have an economically conservative party, and then an economically liberal party, and that'll be it.
You'll have the Constitution Party yep. and the Green Party.
Yep.
You know, so... translate.
Let's not be saying the Constitution Party is going to be viable in the national.
Yeah, let's for the love of all that's holy, no. Oh God, no.
Are you telling me that you go to a Tea Party and you don't hear the Constitution Party? They have a Bible verse on their preamble.
Yeah, and they want to ban porn and you know make sure people don't have sex in weird ways. I mean, come on now. That was in the Constitution. George Washington was all about. The
you don't think that Michelle Bachmann would join that party? If they were politically viable?
Hopefully she did, and she'd get syphilis from one of them. I don't know. I mean,
probably.
Good no. Lord. But with the two parties, I disagree. I think the two major parties, the Republicans and Democrats, will never get smaller. They will, as long as we continue to fight them and we continue to try to make viable, more viable, not viable, but more viable third parties, they will continue to grow and get more and more statist. They will because they do not want to give up their power.
I don't.
Who? What? What? There's powers that be, and the people have been in control of these parties for decades.
Well, let's not hold on. We covered that last week.
Hang on. Yeah, let's not devolve into that discussion
right.
again.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Let's. Maya is just like the new Galt, apparently, just throwing fire on old arguments here. I guess that's why we brought
it. We're going to pretend that didn't happen.
All right.
We did talk about it last week.
We talked about it last week. So, Greg, you are our token Republican libertarian, all right? And we've taken slings and arrows on Reddit, apparently, because we have an oxymoron on the podcast.
I saw that.
You know, translate to her what we're talking about. Ask her questions. Why are you not a small L libertarian? You speak both languages.
I do. Okay. As far as
parcel tongue.
One, as far as your role, I'm sorry, I'm going to go there.
I feel like I'm being interrogated right now.
Well, you are because I think you are where I was about 4 years ago, because I was actually like Chris, I was a big government Republican. I believed that America needed to fill the role of imperialism in the world because we're the world's police and we're the only moral leader.
See, I'm not.
I didn't
there
investigate
either.
It.
I don't think that either.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. So what is your biggest disagreement? One, would you completely get rid of the welfare state?
Yes.
Completely.
Completely.
Wow.
Here's my thing.
She just out-libertarianed you,
she
man.
She did. She did. Like, I believe in government finance, public nope. education for everyone, and that's where it stops.
Nope. I was... Nope.
Wow.
That would be like... That's my only issue.
Statist.
Honestly, like, that would be the only place I would concentrate spending. Is I believe the founders wanted everyone to have education. There's no harm in doing it through school choice and funding it.
Half our audience just wrecked their cars.
They probably did.
On purpose.
How do you pay for it?
But this is good.
He's a plant. He's
no,
a plant.
I'm not.
Okay. I'm okay with some taxes, though. I'm okay with government. I'm totally okay with government.
But you just said that's like – you said you didn't even want – A welfare state.
There's a difference between a welfare state
I'm assuming your proper role of government is to provide a national defense, and that's probably about it.
Yeah, basically.
And no social services
She's
at all.
She's a hardcore constitutionalist.
Why do we need any social services? Why? The human, like, if you don't have the government doing it, somebody's going to privatize it somewhere. Why do you think we have private homeless shelters? Why do you think we have that? That's what church food banks are for. That's what those are for. If it's not run by the government, somebody will do it anyways. That's how it's happened in the past, and it'll happen again.
But then the private greed and
who would build the roads?
You know
who
what?
Who would build the roads?
You can have. They can build the roads. I don't care.
The greedy capitalist, man.
Hippie Bill Cosby, everybody.
I'm a huge fan of capitalism. Huge fan.
What is your Republican issue then? I mean, I don't even hear one.
She just wants a job. She already said it.
So would you close all military bases?
No.
Okay, why not?
Because I think, are you talking domestic or are you talking foreign?
Foreign.
No. Because I think there's threats out there, and
close domestic military bases? No. Why did you have to ask?
Well, he asked if I would close all bases, and I was like, no.
Okay.
So you would keep a few small ones.
I would keep a few ones in strategic locations. One like in Japan, Korea area. One in the Middle East. One in Africa. One maybe in Germany.
You're a constitutionalist, right? A strict constitutionalist to a degree.
Not a strict, no.
But you know, you really agree with the Constitution and a lot of what the founders believed and what they put in it, right?
Sure.
Here we go.
As far as not making treaties fine. And alliances with other countries, which is what we'd have to have a base. If not, we'd be invading them and technically, you know, being a little empire.
Does the Japanese treaty after World War II count?
Yeah. Okay. We shouldn't have it because it's a treaty.
What?
Nothing.
All right, focus,
but,
boys.
Focus.
Ladies.
Focus.
Ladies over here.
But, and how would you pay for it? How would you pay for your military bases?
I'm totally okay with taxes.
How much
would you
taxes?
Collect them? What rates?
I think we should collect sales tax only. I'm a huge fan of sales tax.
Fair tax? Sales tax?
Sure, whatever you want to call it.
Do you know what the fair tax is?
Yeah.
So the fair tax then, right? Would you support that type of taxation?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Are you against property tax?
Yes.
Why do you hate the children?
Exactly. Well, and
see, I don't like property tax. I don't like income tax at all. I don't like either one at all. But I mean, but sales tax, go for it.
I can't believe you are a Romney voter. I mean, I get it. You want to have a job, you know, you want to work in politics, but my lord.
All right, what about drug legalization? Would you legalize all the drugs?
No.
Why not?
Now we're getting to the heart of the issue.
What drugs
now
would you...
Now we're getting to it.
Would you legalize no drugs? Would you stiffen penalties? How would you handle the drug issue, the drug war?
Honestly, I haven't thought too much about it, just like in how I would handle it, because I've never had to. But no, I don't think I've seen the results of drugs, not necessarily just in the prison system, but I've seen the result of drugs on families very much.
I hear room for growth here. What about you?
I do too. Because
can I just bite on that real quick?
Yeah.
So you've seen how drugs negatively affect families?
Did you inhale?
Did so what part of making drugs illegal stops that from happening?
What part of not making drugs illegal stops that from happening?
Boom.
That's
she really got you at
that's
that
not my point. My point is that by making them illegal, you're not stopping it. All you're doing is increasing costs, increasing a prison system.
Human misery.
You're just
it's still human misery. If you see what happens to those children.
Yeah, but there's no cost attached to it. And you're a conservative, so we shouldn't be paying for
it. I don't care.
But my thing is that the natural response to something being a problem shouldn't just be, well, let's take people with guns and tell them you can't do this.
Yeah.
Because all they do is go underground. It gets more dangerous. And a lot of gang violence is a direct result of the drug war. And it is much more demolishing to people's families because kids die.
And so, putting them in prison is no better than if we just got rid of that, got rid of any drug charge going to jail, and then offered rehabilitation.
Hold on, let's give her a specific situation. 19-year-old young black man gets locked up in prison for 2 ounces of pot. He then goes into the criminal justice system, and he never really escapes. He continues to fail as he gets in and out of prison. He goes to prison. He's surrounded by better criminals who teach him how to become a better criminal and gets hooked on harder drugs. That's a direct result of our drug policies, an example like that. How would you solve that situation?
And to just add one little caveat, because I didn't get to say it, an empirical evidence rebuttal to your what part of making them legal stops them from having it is Portugal, who legalized everything and their drug use went down. So
19-year-old young black male.
I think there's a lot more problems than him just being on drugs.
Okay, but you didn't solve my problem at all.
I think
would you legalize pot?
No.
Why wouldn't you?
Because I think it only gives people more ability to get a hold of it, and the more they are able to get a hold of it, the more they'll use it, and the more it'll just continue to become a problem.
Greg, would you like to translate that for us libertarians? Because that made no sense at all.
Nancy Reagan, it's a gateway drug. You're going to start doing heroin a month after you use it. Your family's going to die, and you're going to start killing your children.
Here's a question. Do you not support legalizing drugs because you believe it causes parents to be bad parents? Is that kind of like what you're striking for when you say it breaks up families?
Sometimes, yes. And it teaches them, their kids, that they can use it too. And then it just becomes more and more of a generational problem than it already is.
Okay. I look at this from two arguments. And I think Hornberger actually touched on this on Glenn Beck's episode yesterday. There's the utilitarian argument. The utilitarian argument says that the drug war has failed. You cannot win the drug war. A lot of people made the joke that we should declare a war on recessions because then – or war on economic growth because we'll probably have more economic growth if we do that. The fact remains that the illegalization of drugs is a direct cause of violence in inner cities. It's a direct cause of violence through gang crime. And it is even a direct cause of all the violence in Mexico right now. The drug war, not only is it ineffective and it's impossible to win. I mean, the name escapes me at the moment, but a guy was talking about how in San Francisco they actually did one of the massive drug busts like you saw almost in like the Dark Knight, where they hit all the banks at once.
Time.
What?
What's the question, sir?
No, I'm not asking a question. I'm making a point.
Okay.
No, but no, hang on.
Your point is valid.
So, like, if you've ever seen The Dark Knight, they hit all the banks at once, and they get and that was their goal, hit all the banks at once. They did that with drugs in San Francisco at one point. They hit all the drug dealers at once. They got them all at once. Drugs were off the street for, like, there were no drug dealers. Within a week, there were new ones. That is the pinnacle of what you can do as far as the drug war, and it failed miserably because it's just a market incentive thing.
Right. Well, there's two things that you had said earlier that what did you say? Oh, I can't even think of it now. You said something about the with the role of the government and everything, and that the market will provide. The government doesn't need to do it because the market will provide. Well, people want drugs, the market's going to provide. So there's that little tidbit. But then again, so would you agree with the statement that you do not own the rights to your own body?
No.
Yes, you do.
Wait, say that again.
Do you own the right? Do you have the right to decide what you can and cannot do with your own body?
Yes.
Then why can the government tell me what I can and can't put in it?
Because they're harmful substances, and they will not only harm you, but they will harm
sugar.
Everybody around you.
This is right here.
Sugar does not
is,
harm
so is cholesterol. So is alcohol.
Alcohol.
So
you know how many people get killed by alcohol, hurt, damaged, abused? How many homes have been wrecked because of alcohol?
Cigarettes are more addictive than any other major drug that you can illicit drug.
So
alcohol causes more deaths.
Let me come to the defense of young Hannah here. Libertarians. And I will now translate for her. Libertarians believe that if it is a nonviolent crime, you as an adult will make the choice on whether or not you will be harmed.
Victimless
crimes. So in the case of drugs, you could smoke an 8-cylinder Chevy block if you wanted to, and you take on the consequences. And we as a criminal justice system do more harm than good by making felonies out of those crimes that only affect victims.
Hold on. Say that again, because I'm a little confused.
We'll play it back for you when we air the podcast. Greg, another issue. Let's quiz.
I want to go to the big home run.
I want to go
for the home run, because this is something I've never been able to get clear. And Maya just kind of made it. But as far as abortion goes...
Oh, God.
I want to know, is this... No. I did, because I want to hear, like, the different libertarian perspectives, because I don't know much about that idea. I assume, because you own your body and you can do whatever you want to it, you're staunchly pro-choice.
The libertarian philosophy is mixed on this. It's 50-50, really.
It is really about 50-50.
It really is 50-50, and it was not that way. In the 70s, it was probably 80% pro-choice. People who have been in the Libertarian Party forever will tell you that it's not a government issue, that it's a moral issue and you make that choice. Therefore, the government shouldn't regulate abortion at all. But then you have other libertarians who say that you're taking a life and that is not a victimless crime, so you should be put in jail. It really is about your own personal morality and where you stand on the issue.
There, to get in the meat of it, if you're asking what we stand for, I will come right out and say that I am pro-life. I do not believe
in pro-life.
I do not believe in pro-choice. I understand the argument. Do not, for any of you libertarian purists, I have read For a New Liberty. I know Rothbard's argument for why abortion should be pro-choice. I am not pro-choice. I do believe that it is that the argument is logically valid, but I am perfectly willing to say that my perspective on this comes from something a little bit it's emotional. I will say that my perspective on this comes from an emotional basis, and I have no qualms with that. So yes, I am a pro-life libertarian. I understand the pro-choice arguments from a logical perspective. I have read them. I have consumed them. I do not agree with them.
Okay. Well, I'll give my point. I'm personally, I like the idea of pro-life. It's a spiffy, good feels idea. But I believe as long as something can affect your health in a negative fashion, you should have the ability to choose what to do with it. So as long as there's some little creature growing inside of you that can harm your health and your life and everything else, I think you should have the right to decide on how to take care of it.
Well, I am completely pro-life, personally. Like, I believe, like Dr. Seuss says, and Horton hears a who. I can't say it. A life
dropping
is a life.
Some substantially
yeah, totally
knowledge bomb.
A life is a life, no matter how small, and it's true. Like that, the instant that sperm meets.
Hang on,
it starts on the dance floor.
It does. It honestly does.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I think I do. I do a little bit, but
he does that a lot.
I kind of want to play devil's advocate here, and I want to try and hone in on what Maya's argument, because this is the Rothbardian argument.
I would finish
for the record.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
I know I'm not, but I would say that you're not making the argument that it isn't a life. Is that correct?
Oh, it is 100% alive from the moment the embryo is actually formed. The whole, you know, splitting cell thing. I mean, cells split all the time. That doesn't mean it's a new freaking life. But, yeah, no, it is alive at a certain scientific point. And I'm not, you know, an embryologist or whatever. Okay. So, yeah, no, it is alive. But I think as long as it goes to the whole individuality thing and, you know, individual everything, is that as long as something can negatively affect you, you have the right to decide on how to handle it. So that would be a child. As long as it's inside of you, yeah.
So well, I was just trying to
point now.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to make the point that I didn't want you to assume that he was saying no. Or she was saying that it wasn't a living being.
I understand that. Okay. And I mean, I personally am totally in favor. Like, if I personally had control, which I obviously don't, I would completely just, like, ban abortion. However, I know that that's not possible. And I know we're never, ever going to get anywhere that way. So, I'm going to use this word that libertarians hate. It's this big C word called compromise. And sometimes you have to compromise what you believe in order to get some form of good. And I'm okay with compromising a little bit on abortion in order to get a lot of it stopped.
You're talking to the guy who just said that we need to open the tent up to people like Glenn Beck.
Yeah, you're talking to a different crowd of libertarians. Greg, does that answer your question?
It does. I kind of wanted this to turn into like a case study almost.
Right.
Where are we with reaching out to people? And Hannah is essentially she's not a libertarian, but she's on the path there.
Right.
And so I want to know – what I wanted to find out is how do you move people in that direction?
I see where you're coming from, but picking abortion, that is like the issue that – every libertarian has disagreed on for so long. And I mean, honestly, whenever I'm trying to sell libertarianism to people, pro-choice, not pro-choice, that is just, it's you can't get anywhere with it because it is so scattered.
The way you can phrase the question, how you deliver it, is you're a libertarian if you come at it from a scientific point of view. you're not if you come to it from a subjective emotional point of view.
Well, but there's, again, that's
me,
an issue
call,
that
me not a libertarian.
Libertarians have taken a truce on. So, Hannah, what do we got to do to get you into this political philosophy?
You won't.
Why not?
I've dealt with it. I've worked with it. No, they paid me. They paid me more money than Romney paid me to work for a libertarian organization. And I can't completely wrap my head around it. I really honestly can't. And I can't ever agree with it. And maybe, I mean, you can blame that partially on the way I was raised. I was raised incredibly conservative, and I've come a long way from being so conservative. You can blame it partly on that. You can blame it partly on who most of my friends are, excluding Chris. And you can a lot of things like that. I don't know. I can't completely wrap my head around it, and I can't completely go with it. For some reason, I can't even explain, honestly.
See, now I can sympathize with that, because a long time ago I understood that if you take the non-aggression principle to its logical conclusion, you arrive at a stateless society. I understood that. That is the logical extension of it from an intellectual perspective.
And that is probably the deepest desire of every person that calls themselves a libertarian.
That is, yep. but that is the logical extension on an intellectual level. I'm not talking about practicality here. I'm not out here saying that we should blow up buildings and stuff. I'm saying that the intellectual logical extension of the non-aggression principle is the stateless society. But even I understand that on a intellectual level, and I will put my credibility on the line and say that even I have reservations about that.
Big wager.
Well, and I mean, I think there's always going to be some form of government, because if we don't have government, then like there's always somebody in control, no matter what. No matter if you're looking at a family, if you're looking at a business, if you're looking at a government, if you're looking at a church, regardless, there's somebody in charge. There's something in charge, and you're never going to get rid of that, because that is human nature.
See that, and that, I think that's kind of what that's always been my reservation, is that I do recognize that man is a social animal, and they crave leadership. They crave it. I don't disagree that if you take the non-aggression principle to its logical conclusion, the only justifiable society is one without a state.
See,
I agree with that.
Yeah, a majority of human nature is the desire for control, but some people have gone beyond that or are not a part of that. And so our issue is with you people is keep your control and your government to yourself and don't force us under it. That's where, you know, people like me
then
come
go
from.
No,
from
keep
your
own it to country
you.
Somewhere. Then
no,
stay
no,
here
don't. We don't have to form our own country,
because
we're not
going to
actually form a country. Just if I'm living here, don't force your ideals and your moral
then
ineptitudes
go find
onto
an
me.
Island somewhere that's for sailing.
You go find an island.
That's here first.
No, see,
how'd that work out for the Native Americans?
Yeah.
Actually, Maya, that's probably where you want to be, on your own little Indian reservation.
No, I want to be a Viking, because I want to wholesale
that's,
slaughter
that's
people.
That's the bottom line.
But yeah, Indians are good.
If you trust the government, look
still
at them.
Indians still had a government.
All of them.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's wrap up here, because we're woefully over time. So, Greg, last word on this.
I don't know. I like where the Libertarian Party's going. I like that Glenn Beck's even being discussed. I like that Hannah is essentially a libertarian, but she won't call herself that. The momentum's rolling. I don't think it's Creighton. I don't think it's a self-sustaining issue. I think it's going that way. I think it is embracing pragmatism, opening up the tent, and agreeing to have disagreements underneath that tent. I really do.
Yeah, I do think that's it's an interesting point that Hannah holds many libertarian positions on issues, or is at least willing to think about what we believe, but hasn't just arrived yet. So eventually she will become one of us libertarians, I'm sure of it.
As long as she can separate the subjective from the objective, because if you've noticed in her discussions, she has facts and information and great opinions on her libertarian-esque issues from an objective standpoint. The one she disagrees with the song is coming from a subjective standpoint.
More of an emotional standpoint.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Are you a Misesian?
Have you ever heard of Lysander Spooner?
I follow Stoicism, and I'm a misanthrope, so that I don't follow any other one.
Ask a libertarian what they are, and they'll tell you that they're not a libertarian, and then they have some big
$4
word.
What I say?
I was sure I was a libertarian until I met Galt. I mean, I was sold.
You like Cicero.
And then I met Galt. I'm out.
No, don't pick on Galt.
Marcus Aurelius.
Mitt, come recruit me.
Galt is our buddy.
I'm just kidding. Love you, Galt.
We love Chris.
No, I don't.
All right. Final words to our friend Hannah here.
I will definitely recruit you for Romney in a heartbeat.
So, all right. Give us your last thoughts on libertarianism and this podcast.
This podcast, I'm not so sure about. Libertarianism, I still hold to the fact that in 2 to 3 generations, the Republican Party will be very much a Libertarian Party. And whether or not it's called the Libertarians, whether or not it's called Republicans, whether or not it's called something else, I
Bull
think
moose.
It will...
Let's bring it back.
Maybe it'll be the Bull Moose, or maybe it'll be the Federalist Party. Bully. Who knows? I think that eventually the more conservative economic party will be held to many of the Libertarian standpoints.
All right. Well, there you have it. Sounds like good news from both our conservative and Republican friends, all the way to the voluntarist friends, that the future is bright with libertarianism. So just one last question. The whole point of this podcast has really been about how much, if you're taking the world's smallest political quiz and you land in the libertarian diamond, at what point are we calling everybody a libertarian? I think that's the question that Glenn Beck really brings about for libertarians, is at what point are you a libertarian? And I don't know if there's a definitive answer for that, but I think it's an interesting question for everybody to think about, especially as more and more people adopt libertarianism, you know, because we have to hold true to the principles, but at the same time, we want to grow. All right. Well, thank you for joining us on this week of We're Libertarians. And please share the podcast, spread it with your friends, help us grow. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell. This podcast is produced by What Is a Hoosier Productions.